Collins. Peter B. Collins, news and comment for Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. We're holding the weather forecasters responsible. They have predicted that the winds are going to shift, and after 13 days of toxic smoke in the air in all of Northern California, we're supposed to see a wind shift that clears it out, followed by a rainstorm that hopefully will put out the campfire and some of the other fires plaguing the California landscape. We certainly hope so. We've all been coughing and sneezing, and of course, we have a great sense of loss of the people whose homes have been completely destroyed, and over 80 people have been killed. That dangerous list of people still who can't be accounted for is still in the range of 900. Well, Trump has done it again and again over the last few days. He keeps renewing his oath of loyalty to the House of Saud. And late Friday, the CIA announced it had reached the conclusion that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was directly responsible for the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in October. Now, Trump has famously defied his intelligence agencies, and later in this podcast, we'll update you on our newest in-depth interview with Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst. And he argues that Trump has good reason to be skeptical of the intel people based on the Russiagate scam. But in this case, while I freely admit that we have not heard the recording that we're told exists, and Trump says his ears are plugged, he doesn't want to hear it, the evidence, at least in public, is pretty strong, and the varying explanations and at time acceptance of responsibility by the Saudis make it pretty clear. And we know that nothing really happens in Saudi Arabia that the Crown Prince doesn't know about or authorize. So Trump issued a formal statement, 8 paragraphs long. This is not a tweet, and it's not one of his offhand remarks to reporters about, you know, how smart he is and all that stuff. Here it is, quote, King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman vigorously deny any knowledge of the planning or execution, that's a poor choice of words, of the murder of Mr. Khashoggi. Our intelligence agencies continue to assess all information, but it could very well be that the Crown Prince had knowledge of this tragic event. Maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. Now, this is cartoonish. This is Elmer Fudd quality without the, speech impediment. Because for the President of the United States to issue a formal statement injecting doubt into something that the CIA doesn't have much doubt about is just ridiculous. Maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. He went on to say, we may never know all of the facts surrounding the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. In any case, our relationship is with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So, there will be no serious repercussions for this bloody act that occurred in almost broad daylight. And as you know, I have misgivings about Khashoggi. He's not a clean hero. He was part of the House of Saud and an apologist for it for many years. Still, he did not deserve the fate that was visited upon him. And Trump's equivocation on this simply shows that there is nothing that will get in the way of his desire to attack Iran. The Saudis are central to that. Israel is demanding it. As we'll explain in a few minutes, Netanyahu is clinging to power by a single vote in the Knesset. And so Trump is desperate to maintain the status quo with Saudi Arabia, and the arms sales are probably part of it too. Now, he seems to be ready, according to Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan, to make a trade to Turkey, hoping to get the Erdogan government to stand down on its almost daily attacks on Saudi Arabia and, by implication, Crown Prince MBS. So Cole reports that the Trump White House is looking for ways to expel Fethullah Gulen. He is this murky Turkish leader who's holed up at a compound in Pennsylvania. Our friend Joe Lauria, now the editor at Consortium News, is about the only American reporter who's bothered to interview Fethullah Gulen. And I don't know about this guy. He runs the Hizmet movement. He's got charter schools all across the United States. But is he really the key figure behind that attempted military coup in 2016 against the Erdogan government? And should all Gulenists or members of the Hizmet movement be treated equally? That they all participated in this coup? 50,000 estimated behind bars, another 100,000 who lost their jobs, all blamed for some connection to Gulen? Now, this guy is a green card holder. Many people believe he is a CIA asset of some sort. And the Obama administration told Erdogan to go to the Justice Department, file up some extradition papers, and wait. And they've been waiting. And over this time, the U.S. government has denied, or at least failed to approve, the extradition of Gulen back to Turkey. And I do think that Trump doesn't give two shits about Gulen and would be happy to use him as a chit to buy silence from Turkey. Meanwhile, the Crown Prince war in Yemen may take a new turn. The Shiite rebels, the Houthis, issued a statement that they are going to unilaterally halt rocket fire into Saudi Arabia. And then they said that they had fired a ballistic missile into Saudi overnight in response to an attempted border incursion. But rebel leader Mohammed Ali al-Houthi said, "We are ready to freeze and stop military operations on all fronts in order to achieve peace." He mentioned the rockets specifically as part of a longer statement in which he blamed the U.S. for being the main driver behind the aggression in Yemen. And things are extremely dire. Millions of people are on the verge of starvation, and the battle has been centered on the port city of Hodeida, which is where any relief from famine would begin, with shipments entering the port. So I'm guardedly hoping that we could see, hopefully, a break, if not an end, to this gruesome war in Yemen. Back here in the United States, Trump, of course, issued that order that those who seek asylum in the United States must enter through a formal point of entry. That if you swim the Rio Grande or jump the fence or come through the desert in Arizona, you are disqualified from seeking asylum. But Judge John Tigger, here in San Francisco, federal court judge, issued a ruling, and he does put a halt to this action. And he has very strong language, and I want you to pay attention because there are two things that he's saying. One is that the attempted ban, which was delivered in a presidential proclamation that explicitly invokes the migrants and claims a border crisis, is pernicious on its face because applying for asylum in the United States, no matter how you enter or where, is legal. The law explicitly says aliens can apply for asylum whether or not they entered at a designated port of arrival. Now, the judge says, and this is the part that's a little scary, that Trump's proclamation and the interim rule that went with it actually claimed for Trump the authority to shut down the southern border to any and all asylum seeking. The judge writes, "The rule itself actually gives the president the ability to issue even more restrictive proclamations. The rule gives the president plenary authority to halt asylum claims entirely along the southern border." But will he do that? And has the judge tried to tee this up with an inescapable Supreme Court decision by essentially tweaking the court and saying, in the travel ban decision, when you said that the president does have the authority to pluck certain people and say, you can't come into this country, would they expand that to a sweeping ban on asylum? And one expert on immigration said this latest ruling reaffirms that the asylum law's text and structure prevent the president from asserting such boundless power. But the Supreme Court read the president's power broadly in the travel ban case. The asylum ban case will show if the Supreme Court regards the statute's text and structure as imposing any substantial limits on presidential power. And given that Brett Kavanaugh is now on the court, I fear that this could lead to a more expansive ruling. Time will tell. Well, it only took a few minutes yesterday after the White House confirmed that an investigation by the Ethics Office showed that Ivanka Trump had used her personal email for government business hundreds of times. And the chant that I heard all over Facebook was from aggrieved Hillary Clinton supporters saying, "Lock her up." Now, at this point, I can't create a clear equivalency. Ivanka Trump didn't have a private server in the bathroom of her Chappaqua home, but she apparently used Gmail or whatever she uses in ways that clearly break the rules. And Richard Blumenthal, senator from Connecticut, called for an investigation of Ivanka's email use either by the Office of Governmental Ethics or Congress. There's no way that she had no knowledge of the rules. But really, said Blumenthal, there's a larger story here, which is the mixing of public and private. As with her clothing brand and her public position, the blending and mixing of emails on her private account or public account, and it raises the issue of whether there's been anything improper. And a Clinton campaign staffer, one of the top people, Philippe Raines, tweeted, "John Kelly, the White House chief of staff, must be compelled to explain to Congress why Ivanka and Jared's security clearances were granted on a permanent basis despite their email practices being known at that time to the White House as running afoul of security requirements." And, of course, this isn't the first time that the Trump family has, you know, just blatantly violated rules of this sort. We know that Jared Kushner used private email in an apparent violation of federal records laws. Trump has reportedly shunned security concerns by continuing to use his personal cell phone. Trump attacked Hillary Clinton for the way she ran the State Department, calling it pay for play. But as we'll get to shortly here, he traded a Medal of Freedom for $120 million in campaign cash. And, of course, Trump said that Obama didn't read his intelligence briefings, nor does he get briefed in person. Too busy, I guess. Now, that's back when, I guess, around 2015. But, of course, Trump often, let's see what it says here. Obama didn't always get an in-person briefing. He often read his daily briefing instead. Trump doesn't even do that. He has taken the briefing about once a week or less, often hands it off to Trump, VP Pence, and he never reads it. "I get it when I need it," he said. "I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing in the same words every day for 8 years. And he also, of course, railed against the use of executive orders and said, "I will terminate every single illegal Obama executive order and will restore the constitutional rule of law." But most of the things he does are with these huge signatures on proclamations, executive orders. And maybe Jared and Ivanka will benefit from the sentencing reform that is one of the pet projects of the Crown Prince Jared Kushner. And the New York Times really puts it into context in a report over the weekend, because Jessica Sloan, who has partnered with Van Jones in an organization called Cut 50, they originally were advocating for sentencing reform that would reduce the federal prison population by half. And the estimate today is that less than 4% of the federal inmate population would get some benefit, not necessarily a release, from this package. For example, they're going to increase good time, or credit off your sentence for good behavior, by 1 week a year, from 47 to 54 days. And it is important that they are ending the disparity in sentencing over crack cocaine compared to powder cocaine, the Joe Biden legacy. But that will only affect 2,500 to 3,000 people. Obama addressed many of those cases while he was president with a round of clemency. So I'll take any relief for federal prisoners, but this is, any way you carve it up, not a major change, and not nearly what the people who brought it forward were hoping for. Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case arising from the insertion by the Trump administration and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross of a question in the 2020 sentence about your citizenship. And it's very clear that if this happens, undocumented people will avoid participating in the census, and that will lead to lower numbers that affect the sharing of federal dollars, the allocation of congressional seats, and many other issues that flow from the federal census. And if I had to guess, I think the Supreme Court will probably ultimately allow the question, because historically it was on the sentence and census, I believe, up until the 1940s or for some period of time leading up to that period. So we will see how this plays out. And I'm glad Friday the Supreme Court agreed to hear arguments over whether Wilbur Ross and others can be compelled to explain why they put it on the census. Their excuse is, oh, it's for the Voting Rights Act. We want to make sure that we're properly, reflecting the rights of people to vote. My bullshit detector goes off when I hear that, and you can just imagine. Robert Reich, the former labor secretary in the first Clinton administration, and a guy who writes widely and well. His latest piece at The Guardian says, break up Facebook, and while we're at it, Google, Apple, and Amazon. And he says we're into the new Gilded Age, just like at the turn of the 19th to 20th century, when we had the robber barons, the oil companies who used their wealth and power to drive out competitors and corrupt American politics. And he says that Facebook and Google dominate advertising. Apple dominates smartphones. I'm not so sure about that. I think the Android has a healthy share of the market. He also says laptop computers, I don't think they dominate. Anyway, he claims that these concentrations of power stifle innovation, and these massive concentrations of economic power generate political clout that is easily abused. And he talks about the recent disclosures about Facebook and the way it hired the Oppo research firm. It tracks senators' Facebook donations, what kind of computer and social media they used. And some of that's pretty innocuous, but it could be used in ways to keep people from being too critical of Facebook or the other companies. And this stunned me. In the 2018 midterms, the largest recipient of big tech's largesse was the Democratic fundraising platform ActBlue, collecting nearly $1 billion from people related to the tech industry. I'm surprised by that. Well, today I had a great conversation that ran about an hour with my friend Ray McGovern. He served our government in military intelligence, then at the CIA, and he has been a sharp critic of our government since the war in Iraq erupted in 2003. In today's wide-ranging conversation, we talk about his encounter last week with James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, and Ray cited Clapper's book in brushing him back over the phony evidence that was used to justify the invasion of Iraq and the subsequent use of questionable information to promote the Russiagate narrative. And in this excerpt, you will hear Ray McGovern shift into analyst mode. And he speculates that based on the release of Marble Framework in the Vault 7 hack, that Guccifer 2.0 just might be John Brennan. Take a listen.
Very early on, a year and a half ago, we suggested to the president that he ask the FBI, who's Guccifer 2.0? Now, we use non-sexist language applied to Guccifer 2.0. So he, she, or it is not only shadowy, not only demonstrably bogus, but Bill and I, Bill Binney and I, think we know who it is, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I want to say, first off, this is not forensics. This is the kind of intelligence analysis that I did, connecting dots and so forth, you know? And there is a revelation by WikiLeaks, again, documentary stuff from the CIA, which reveals cyber tools, one of which was used in 2016, and it's called Marble Framework. Now, what does that tool allow the CIA to do? Well, to hack into a server or a computer, disguise who hacked in, and leave telltale signs like, oh, maybe Cyrillic, Russian language, and others to attribute the hack to somebody else.
Now, and who's that guy? Dzerzhinsky was the founder of the KGB, and his name was left behind somewhere?
Yeah, inadvertently, they left behind Felix Emundovich, the first name and patronymic of Dzerzhinsky, the first head of the KGB. So whoever did this, they're saying the GRU, give me a break. GRU, I know that this is the Russian military intelligence agency. They're real pros. They're not going to leave Cyrillic behind. So we know who can do that. We know that it was used in 2016. We also know that as soon as that report came out, the New York Times, Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal said, do not report that. Do not let that in your paper. And indeed, the New York Times has kept it completely out of the what this Marble Framework cyber tool can do. So our guess, and this is guesswork. Now, it's very different from all the other forensics and physics-based analysis that my friends in NSA do, or former NSA technical directors, and there are two of them in our group. It's connecting other dots. And when you have Vault 7 Marble Framework hanging out there with this capability, it's not a leap of imagination to say, maybe Guccifer 2.0 is John Brennan. Somebody ought to ask him.
I invite you to listen to my full interview with Ray McGovern. It's available for subscribers today at iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, and, of course, at peterbcollins.com. And it's all made possible by listeners like you who support me with your monthly contributions. People like Suzanne Bowen, Auntie Lundberg, Aidan McAleer, and Peter Sarkissian. I appreciate each one of you. Peter signed up for an annual subscription. I better get that bonus CD off to him. The bonus CD you get for a new annual subscription with a continental U.S. mailing address is John Dist's new release called American University, focused on JFK and his assassination. It's quite a powerful piece. I'd love to send it to you. All you got to do is sign up for a new annual subscription at peterbcollins.com. Just head on over to the website, click menu, then click on Become a Subscriber. You'll be on the sign-up page before you know it, and it's as easy as P-I-E. Well, Chuck Schumer is joining the three senators in a challenge on the interim appointment of Matthew Whitaker as acting attorney general. And Schumer's taking a different angle. He is asking the Inspector General of Justice to open a formal investigation into whether there's been any unlawful or improper communications between Whitaker and the White House, either when he was chief of staff to Jeff Sessions or when he got moved up to acting attorney general a couple of weeks ago. And this is important because Trump did start to tweet again against Mueller, and it appears he had some updated information about mayhem and yelling and witnesses being threatened by the Mueller investigators. So I think this is a reasonable effort on Schumer's part. I'd like to see him go full-throated, though, and push to block the insertion, the installation of Whitaker as the acting attorney general. In Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu is holding on by his fingernails. He's being investigated for corruption. He has been blasted for the botched undercover Israeli raid into Gaza last week that led to the most violent fighting between Israel and Gaza militants since the war in 2014. And he got a reprieve. He named himself
as the defense minister, and then the education minister, Naftali Bennett, who holds the keys to the coalition because he can pull out and cause the Netanyahu government to collapse. He's only got a margin of one seat in the Knesset. And so Bennett, these are choice words. I tell the prime minister, we are withdrawing right now all of our political demands and will stand to help you in this great mission of getting Israel to win again. If the government would really start leading toward the right path, acting like a real right-wing government, it's worth trying. So Bennett is saying that Netanyahu has not been brutal enough to the Palestinians. He has not extracted the disproportionate punishment that Israel often visits on the people who are penned in the open-air prison called Gaza. Also, Trump has established that you can get yourself a Medal of Freedom for just $120 million. Last week, he honored Orrin Hatch, the retiring senator from Utah, Roger Staubach, former Dallas Cowboys quarterback, Elvis Presley, Antonin Scalia, and Miriam Adelson, because her husband, Shelley, has kicked in $120 million. Trump rewarded that by moving the American embassy to Jerusalem. And remember when Bill Clinton caused such a fuss because he allowed big donors to spend a night in the Lincoln bedroom? I remember. There was a summit last week in Papua New Guinea, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Conference, and it ended in chaos. The U.S. demanded to emphasize free trade in the communique at the end of the meeting. And I don't have a lot of details here about this incident, but for the U.S. to impose tariffs that are going to ratchet up to 25% on most Chinese exports to the United States, that increase will take effect in January. For us to talk about free trade has got to be really galling to the Chinese. And so China sent a group of people that burst into the office of the host country's foreign minister where the communique was being prepared, and in the end, it was tabled. And finally today, I want to commend Kevin Gostola, the scrappy journalist who runs Shadowproof. He dug up a document that was released by the ACLU recently. It's a 2007 report on CIA torture that came from the agency's Office of Medical Services. And Gostola, very, very skilled journalist, compared some of the language there with the language in the declassified summary of the Senate report on CIA torture that was mostly suppressed by Obama and John Brennan at the CIA. And the top secret document has some spin to it because they were concerned that the medical doctors and psychologists who were working in the torture program were going to be criticized and that there was a distorted picture that required a more informed internal account. So in the secret history written to defend the reputation of doctors in the torture program, they refer to crippling leaks and suggest that human rights activists will continue to interfere. But what he shows is that there are different details. For example, the CIA was considering using a drug, a truth serum, to help them interrogate detainees. The agency never seriously pursued the use of drugs because of legal obstacles, a prohibition against medical experimentation. But then they waterboarded people like Abu Zubaydah. And when you compare the two reports, the Office of Medical, whatever it is, Services, they say that, for example, they waterboarded Abu Zubaydah. They then reported that there was very little that they thought they could get out of him. They thought that he had coughed up, pardon the choice of words there, whatever he had. He did vomit a couple of times during the waterboard with some beans and rice. It's been 10 hours since he ate, so this is surprising and disturbing. We will only feed him and ensure the liquid nutrition for a while now. Then they used the small box. They slapped him and walled him. They waterboarded him. And then they said that we're done. And that we have, let's see,
The same day the interrogation team informed CIA headquarters it was unlikely Zubeda had actionable new information about current threats to the United States. They insisted the following day it was highly unlikely he had information they wanted, but headquarters still believed he was withholding, and they ordered him to keep torturing him. Enhanced measures continued for the next 10 days. The water board was applied only 1 or 2 days, and no new information surfaced. So this, I think, is really good background and updated reporting. I've linked to Kevin Gostola's article, and I encourage you to check it out when your schedule permits. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. I hope you'll share it far and wide. We post it on YouTube to make it easy to access. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.